Hello through the word. We are in Genesis 30, right in the middle of Jacob's story. And in this chapter, we have jealousy, greed, deception, rivalry, and somehow God's grace just showing up through all of it. Now, if you hear all of that and say, that sounds to me like family, that's exactly what it is. Jacob is starting a family, and so far, it's a little messy. It started off with the wrong wife on the wedding night, and it just got messier from there. Jacob has two wives now, Rachel, the woman he loves, who hasn't been able to get pregnant yet, and her sister Leah, who never feels loved by Jacob, but has four sons already. It's complicated, and that's life. Life is complicated. Keep in mind here that Jacob is a man of faith now. He believes in the one true God. Now, he wasn't before. He was a liar and deceiver. But God met Jacob on the lonesome road and declared his great plan for him. Jacob believes in the Lord as his God now, but following God does not make all your problems go away. I hope you know that. God said to Jacob, I am with you, I'll never leave you, but he never said, no more problems. Well, Jacob's problems are just heating up here in chapter 30, beginning at verse 1. When Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, she envied her sister. She said to Jacob, give me children or I shall die. Jacob's anger was kindled against Rachel, and he said, am I in the place of God, who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb? So Rachel is still barren, and she envies her sister. Most of this chapter is driven by envy. It's ugly. It's destructive. It will drive this family to endless division. But envy is inherent with polygamy. I don't think that God wired the heart to share romantic love with two partners. It's made to be exclusive. Consider Song of Solomon. Says, I am my beloved, and my beloved is mine, and like a lily among thorns is my bride among the maidens. Romantic love is made to be exclusive. Now the irony, of course, is that Solomon, who wrote that, apparently knew it, but never lived it. Polygamy can make a mess. This is not a condemnation. In many places, polygamy is still practiced today. God doesn't condemn it here in this chapter. He just presents it like it is. In the New Testament, Jesus brings marriage back to the beginning. When God made one man and one woman, husband and wife, your heart is wired for one. Your heart is also wired for just one God. You cannot serve two masters. That's the issue with idols. If you love God and love money or pleasure or knowledge, there's always going to be conflict. And conflict is exactly what Jacob gets. Rachel, the one he loves, says, give me children or I shall die. This one gets Jacob angry. Am I in the place of God? There's a powerful insight on marriage here. Your spouse is not God. Don't ask your spouse to do God's job or to be what God is supposed to be for you. I call this spousal idolatry. This is why I don't buy into that old romantic notion of you complete me. It sounds sweet, but it's way too much pressure for a spouse. Your spouse cannot complete you. You have too much missing. Only God can fulfill you, satisfy your soul, answer your heart's cry, truly understand you. Find your satisfaction in God. Take the pressure off your spouse, and you will both enjoy marriage much more. As for Jacob, I don't think he had any time to enjoy his marriage. He's got two wives jealous of each other already. Then Rachel gets an idea. And here comes wife number 3 in verse 3. Then she said, here is my servant, Bilhah. Go into her, so that she may give birth on my behalf, that even I may have children through her. So Jacob has wife number 3, and along come sons number 5 and 6. This marriage is just like the one Abraham had with Hagar. Bilhah becomes a wife to Jacob, but really more of a surrogate mom for Rachel. This is not by God's direction, but it was common practice, and the Bible tells it as it is, and that is complicated. Bilhah has 2 sons, Dan and Naphtali, and Rachel starts to feel vindicated, because they are sort of surrogately her kids. And in verse 8, Rachel said, with mighty wrestlings I have wrestled with my sister and have prevailed. Rachel thinks she's won, but a battle driven by envy is a battle that no one wins. Leah jumps back in the ring, ready to fight. And in verse 9, when Leah saw that she had ceased bearing children, she took her servant Zilpah and gave her to Jacob as a wife. So Jacob marries wife number 4. Now, for any of you thinking, hey, lucky Jacob, 4 wives and he gets whatever he wants, hey, don't be a fool. A man is wired to want to bring happiness to his wife. No matter what Jacob does, he can't make his wives happy. That's frustrating. Proverbs 21 says, "Better to live on a corner of the roof than share a house with a quarrelsome wife." Jacob had four wives, and two of them quarreled constantly. So Zilpah has two sons, Gad and Asher, and this is starting to feel like Santa Claus counting off his reindeer. Eight boys so far. A question. So if all this four wives stuff is wrong, or at least not God's best plan, then does that mean that these extra kids are also not God's best plan? Are they mistakes? Hey, this is personal. I'm Jewish on my mom's side, so I came from somewhere in this mess. Now this is a real key. Only God can make a masterpiece out of a mess. People make mistakes, and people make kids, but only God can make the soul of every child, and God makes plans and purpose for every soul. If you were born into a mess that you didn't create, take heart. God made you, and God does not make mistakes. As you read Genesis 30, Jacob's family is not the ideal family, not the way God meant family to be. Yet God is building the Jewish people out of this mess. Jesus was born out of this family. Check out Jesus' family tree sometime. The Savior of the world, God's plan for all humanity, came from a family line with more than one human mistake. So the kids keep on coming. And now Leah has three more, Issachar, Zebulun, and finally a girl, Dinah. And then at long last, in verse 22, "Then God remembered Rachel, and God listened to her and opened her womb. She conceived and bore a son and said, 'God has taken away my reproach,' and she called his name Joseph." So Jacob's 11th son is Rachel's first, and his name is Joseph. Then at verse 25, the story shifts direction. "As soon as Rachel had borne Joseph, Jacob said to Laban, 'Send me away, that I may go to my own home and country. Give me my wives and my children, for whom I have served you, that I may go.'" So Jacob is ready to go home. He's got that old Daughtry song from American Idol stuck in his head, and he's going home. Now Uncle Laban's not ready to let him go that easy. Not only did Jacob marry his two daughters, but Jacob still works for Laban as a shepherd. And Laban knows that the Lord has blessed him greatly because of Jacob. Laban is still an idolater. He doesn't follow the Lord, but he knows when God has blessed him. But Jacob's got to get back and start his own household. These places and these faces are growing old, and he's got to move. The rest of the chapter is a classic duel between two classic tricksters. Jacob and Laban are both con artists, but Jacob is a God-fearer now. As you read, watch how Jacob's new life in God plays out, how he stands on his honesty of all things, and watch how the old con man Laban uses Jacob's honesty against him. Read Genesis 30 today, wade through the mess, watch the family grow, and watch carefully for God's plan and God's grace to shine through it all.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the word.